So, Mr. Mike Parry, here we are. This is podcast number 30.
It certainly is.
On the record series. We've had a little rest. We've recuperated.
Yep.
We're ready to go.
Ready to go.
A lot's happened since we last spoke about what's in the news.
Absolutely. We've got to talk about some big, big events which have happened, right? Mm. And the biggest event that that's happened, which has grabbed my attention, is the death of Max.
Okay? Max Clifford,
Max Clifford, indeed.
There's been an awful lot written about it, hasn't there?
There's been an awful lot written about him. Only today there was a another obituary in the Times. I've been going out for two or three days and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Now, let me tell you, Max Clifford was the most dishonest and untruthful man I ever came across. Mm. And I first found this out, remarkably, a new nightclub opened in Shaftesbury Avenue, called Shaftesbury's,
Okay.
Believe it or not.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, very original
name.
So I go
He seemed to do an awful lot of PR for sort of establishments, didn't he?
Yes, he did, yeah, definitely.
I mean, I met him, and I'll tell you later about it, but he was the opening of a restaurant or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he did all that sort of thing. But anyway, so these guys have hired Max Clifford to organise the club. So I go along, and it's a formal opening at about sort of midday.
Right.
There's loads of champagne sloshing around and all that kind of stuff. And I'd never met Max Clifford before in my life.
Was there a sort of collection of dolly birds as well, as they used to be known?
Absolutely. In those days, they would call them, you know, the Dolly Birds or something like that. Wouldn't
dream
of calling young ladies that these days.
No.
But so the champagne's flowing, all that. We're talking to the owner of the club, and then Max sidles up to me. Never met him before in my life.
Yeah.
And he said, "You, Mike, from the Express?"
Mm.
I worked for the Daily Express, obviously. I said, "Yeah." He said, "I've heard about you." He says, "Look, come over here." So I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'm Max Clifford." I said, "Oh, all right, Max." He said, "Yeah." He said, "I like the Express. It's my paper. My dad read it for years."
Right.
I said, "Oh, right, okay."
Yeah.
He said, "Look, I'll give you something, okay."
I mean, he was very personable, wasn't he?
Oh, very personable, although he never drank all his life. Mm. Never took a drop of alcohol to his lips.
Do you know what I always say about people who don't drink?
Yeah,
they're
something
almost
wrong with
always
them.
Sex pests.
Yeah, oh, really?
No, seriously.
Really?
Because there's a reason why they don't drink, which we can go into later.
Okay, anyway, I said, "Oh, yeah, what is it?" He said, "I see that girl over there." It was a very attractive girl on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
He said, "That's Andrew's new girlfriend."
Oh, yeah.
I said, "Well, Prince Andrew," because Prince Andrew was recently returning from the Falklands as a war hero.
Right.
And he was single. You know, Fergie wasn't on the scene.
Uh-huh.
Kim, in fact, it was even before Q Stark, actually.
Yeah.
Another story I followed. But I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Don't tell anybody. I'm giving it to you."
Yeah.
He said, "That is Andrew's new girlfriend."
Yeah.
I said, "Really?" I said, "Fantastic." I said, "What's her name?" So he told me her name, you know.
Right.
So he said, "Wait till it all quiets down." So people go. So I went over. I said, "Oh, hello," whatever her name was.
Right.
I can't remember. Elizabeth or something.
Was this before Q Stark?
This was before Q Stark, yeah.
Because there was quite a lot of interest in that time about Andrew's girlfriend.
Of course there was. He'd come back as a war hero.
Yeah.
He'd got off the boat with a rose between his teeth, flinging his officer's cap in the air on the dockside at Portsmouth, you know, in the site of HMS
Victory. I bizarrely actually went to his passing out parade in Dartmouth.
Oh, really?
Because a mate of mine that I was at university with, passed out in the same year as Prince Andrew.
Really?
I mean, I was a very long way away from it all,
but
I could see him standing in the line.
Yeah, sure.
Very odd.
So she said, "Look, I'm awfully sorry, but I've been told not to say anything, you know, because..."
Well, did you blunder straight in with, "Are you Prince Andrew's new girlfriend?"
No, I just said, "Nice to talk to you, all kind of stuff, you know, how are you doing this?" I said, "Now, look, you know, I'm my sense, but, you know, I want to try and do this formally and keep you out of any sort of limelight." And
Which was, of course, a lie, right?
Yeah, of course it was a total lie.
Yeah.
And but Max had told me her surname, you see. And
did you have a snapper with you at this point?
No, that all comes later.
Right.
So before I'd even revealed who I was, so to speak, I found out where she came from.
Uh-huh.
I said, "Oh, are you new to London?" I said, "The big town, you know, big lights." She said, "Oh," she said, "I'm really, I come from a little village in Kent." She gave the name of the village, you know.
Right.
And then I found out her name. So anyway, you know, being smarter than the average bear,
yes.
I go back to the office. And in those days, we still had phone books in the office. Can you believe that?
No, I can't believe
it. Yeah, you know, there were no computers or anything like that.
Well, guess what? When I came back from America, we still had phone books
in the office.
And that was in 1992.
Absolutely.
They still had them.
There's this huge cabinet full of phone books. I got through them all because half of them were ripped up.
Yeah.
Half of them were missing.
Because you're the kind of guy that would go through a phone book and take the page out.
I certainly would, So
nobody else could use it. The next person wanted to use it didn't have the facility.
Absolutely. So anyway, I found it. I got it. And there was only one person of her name in the village where she said she came from.
Right.
So I rang this number, and a woman answered the phone.
Right.
And I said, "Oh, hello." I said, "Is that Mrs. Thompson?"
Right.
You know, for want of a better word. She said, "Yes, can I help you?" And I said, "Well, look," I said, "I'm sorry to bother you." I said, "But I happen to know that your daughter is..." "Oh, who is this?" I said, "Well, my name's Mike. I'll be straightforward with you. My name's Mike, but I'm Daily Express. I met your daughter this morning. I understand that she's befriended Prince Andrew. Mm. She said, I can't say anything about that.
Did you give him the, give her the impression that this woman had cooperated with you?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and I said, we've got some lovely pictures of her, which we'll send down to you and all this kind of stuff, you know. Yeah, yeah. And she said, I can't really talk about it, honestly. I said, well, you know, I said, what happens if he comes round for a cup of tea? She said, oh, yeah. I'd get the best bone china, but I can't talk about it, you know. And then, and
so
I,
there's your intro.
Yeah, absolutely, and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, I rushed to the news desk. I said, it's absolutely bona fide true. Right. I said, I've got the pictures. I said,
because. So you got pictures of her now?
Yeah, because I rang the picture desk, you see, half an hour later and said, send somebody back and take some furtive pictures of this girl.
So did they pap her inside or as she was coming out or what?
They came back inside and asked if they could take a picture. Yeah. And they didn't say why. Then she just said, because she was been hired to promote the club, you know. Of course. So it was no problem.
Poor woman.
Yeah. So anyway, this appears on the front page the next day. The rest of Fleet Street.
It's terrible, isn't it, really?
Yeah, the rest of Fleet Street is run ragged.
This is a world exclusive by Mike Parry.
Yeah. It's 11 o'clock at night. Right. I was in a pub in Fleet Street. All my mates suddenly started getting calls to the pub phone, because we didn't have mobile phones in those days, right? You know, chase this up, you know, why haven't you got this? Did you go to that launch today? Why are you idiot? And all this kind of stuff, you know. Right. Absolutely fantastic.
But that was the worst thing about being a reporter, because if you were, for example, a reporter on the daytime shift, you would have come in at, say, 9 o'clock, maybe half past eight in the morning. Mm. You'd have been sent to that launch at, say, midday. You'd have probably filed some copy.
Yeah.
And you might not even have been in the pub. You might have been at home.
That's
But at 11 o'clock at night, you get a phone call calling you a complete wanker for missing the story.
Complete idiot. You've dunned ahead. You know, what are we paying for?
So, I mean, this is why people who worked in the profession went mad.
That's
because it was never, you were never alone.
No.
For a second.
No, absolutely.
You couldn't go, I'm terribly sorry, I'm just putting my child to bed.
Yes.
I don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out there and get the story.
Absolutely. So, anyway, that's in the morning. So, that night, it is announced she's actually going to be in Shaftesbury's.
Right.
So, I should have seen it coming from a mile off. You know, what's she doing going back to Shaftesbury's?
Right.
She was hired to promote the place.
Right.
It's another event they've hired her for. She was so popular.
Right.
Needless to say, the world's press descend on Shaftesbury's. The owner comes out, poses in Shaftesbury Avenue with this girl, like he was her father or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It goes all over the world and all that. And of course, it turned out she didn't even know Andrew. And the mother had been primed by Max Clifford to say, you know...
This is the great thing, and I've been listening to all of the people talking about Max Clifford and all of the things that he used to say.
Mm.
And there are, you know, incredibly people who believe that Max Clifford holds great secrets of the rich and famous, you know, and that one of the reasons that he's somehow now perished is because they couldn't allow him to tell the stories. In actual fact, he was the most great and massive self-publicist.
Yeah, he was,
And that was his greatest kind of charm,
wasn't it?
In a way, because actually what he did was he made you think that he knew a load of stuff, but he didn't actually know as much as he said.
Didn't know anything. I had a friend,
I mean, somebody was talking about him on the radio just the other day, talking about Paul McCartney, you know. Mm. Nobody's ever heard Paul McCartney saying... Oh, in the early days, Max Clifford was a big help to us.
No. He claimed that he was a press officer for the Beatles at EMI.
For EMI, right.
Hunter Davis, who wrote the first Beatles official biography, Shout, said he has got 500 books on the Beatles and millions of press cuttings.
Yeah.
And never once has he spotted the name Max Clifford.
No.
And, that's what Max was all the time. But a friend of mine who now works as a television presenter...
Mm.
Worked for him during her holidays when she was, you know, on a media course in his office.
Right.
And she was primed to walk in when he was with clients and say things like, Kirk Douglas is on the phone, Max. Or, I've got Sinatra's people from New Jersey.
Right.
And things like that all the time. And he'd say, can I just take this call?
Yeah, yeah.
And the girl, the person on the end of the line would be the secretary outside.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's like that scene from House of Cards, you know, where the bloke picks up the phone and is pretending to
and
talk to the president.
Like, I'm sorry, Frank. You know, I can't help you today because I've got these people with me and my absolute and utter devotion and attention must be spent on them.
Absolutely. But I told you the day I got my revenge on Max Clifford, although, you know, when I say revenge, nobody ever cared the story was untrue. It was a great story, you know. And
well, that was what I suppose his talent was, because he realised that actually with a lot of the newspapers in those days, especially the Red Top Sundays, they kind of didn't care if there was something slightly remiss about it, you know?
If it filled three pages that day and there was a very good-looking girl involved, you take a picture of, there's no problem.
Yeah.
But then again, do you remember, I told you about 3 or 4 years ago, I go to this charity do for the horse charity I support down in Guildford.
Right.
I'm sitting there and this immaculate Rolls-Royce pulls up, okay? Mm. And it was Max Clifford parking on a double yellow line outside.
Well, do you remember he always used to pose outside his house?
Absolutely.
With the Rolls Royce in the background whenever he was on Sky TV.
What's the name's hill in Weybridge?
Somewhere like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But he would always have the roller, the house,
and
he would just stand in front of it, that's waxing lyrical about whatever he was talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he had Max 100, which is his number plate, on his car. And do you know what? those Rolls Royces were lent to him by Rolls Royce for that very purpose.
Is that right?
Well, in those days, he was like the king of the PR spin and all that. There was no dirt on him at all.
Right.
They used to lend him the cars. I remember, I used to think, how come he changes his Rolls Royce every time there's another press conference in his driveway? They just bring a roller off the back of a lowloader and put it there for him and let him use it for a month, you know. But no, the Rolls Royce pulled up. He parked outside the W line. And I was doing this charity thing, and he'd come as a patron of the charity because it was all connected to the showbiz world.
Yeah.
There were lots of show business people involved in this horse charity because they liked horses.
Yeah, yeah.
So he comes and he sits there. I said, new roller, Max? He said, yeah. He said, do you want a lift in it?
Mm.
And I declined.
Right.
But it didn't stop me taking a picture of it, put it on Twitter and saying, you know, me and my mate Max with his new roller at a charity function today. Yeah. And guess what? The following morning, 6 o'clock news, Max Clifford had just been arrested in his house in St George's Hill, Weybridge. That's what it was called.
I've warned you about the Porky Dicks before.
Yeah, and that was the start.
You know, he should have known.
That was the start of the prosecution, which led to him going to jail for 8 years.
Right.
Amazing.
And incredible as well. I mean, I was reminded of his bizarre nature just the other night when they were recalling on Sky News the time where the guy was outside the court while the case was going on.
Oh, yeah, I remember
Southwark Crown Court, I think it was. And as the guy's doing the report, and this is in the middle of a court case, which is a very serious court case. He was accused of some very serious crimes, sexual assault, terrible underage stuff, you know. And he comes out as the cameras are rolling.
That's right.
And he stands behind the guy, kind of like waving like this,
He stood behind a Sky reporter, Mike, and he put his hands together as though it was a book.
Yeah.
And he started flicking his left hand over, like,
but also every
what
time,
else is in the book?
And every time the guy made a hand movement, he aped the hand movement, did the same thing.
Yeah.
And then eventually, he just stood so close to him, the guy turned around and was like, oh, hello, Max.
Yeah, oh, you're all right, Max. Yeah.
Okay, and of course he couldn't speak, but because it would have been in contempt of court.
Yeah.
But it was a very bizarre thing to do.
Well, he told people later, because the other thing he did was, he walked into the press room one day and he was at liberty, he was on bail, he wasn't in custody, he was on bail during the whole course of the trial. He walked in, there were two female journalists sitting on one side of the room, and he went up to them and said, I don't suppose either of you are free tonight, are you? And he told somebody later what he was doing was he was appearing to be so cool throughout the whole case
and
making jokes because he knew he was going to get off because he wasn't guilty.
But, I mean, he must have known he was guilty because he must have realised what he was doing. He must have been... I mean, I never had that many dealings with him very much, really. But when I did meet him, on the odd occasions that I did meet him, and one of the times, as I say, was at the opening of some... It was like an Indian restaurant or something. It wasn't even anything massive. You know? But it was in Marylebone, around the back of Marylebone High Street. And I remember going there and seeing this guy, Max Clifford. I think that was the first time I'd met him.
Right, yeah.
And he kind of was similar with me, because I worked for the Express then. So I think he gave me the same speech,
that's right,
really liked the Daily Express, my dad rules. Read it, you know. And I'm thinking, I don't even know what I'm here for.
Yeah,
I mean, this
is
like the launch of some crap. He'd promised all sorts of PR spin, all sorts of, you know, stars were going to be there. And it was all very low rent. It was like, you know, C list, D list, E list, a couple of base three girls, you know, nothing serious.
Sure.
But he came across as a very kind of sleazy, slimy kind of character.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. As I say, never drunk in his life, never took drugs, didn't indulge in, you know, lewd behaviour and all that. Had a villa in Spain, used to go to the. I mean, it's a bit difficult to understand why you'd get on a plane, go to your villa in Spain for the weekend, and all you do is swim up and down in the swimming pool.
Yeah.
Spain's a fun place, you know, and but he didn't go out for dinner or anything like that.
And he had a wife who he claimed he was looking after, which was almost...
She had cancer, unfortunately.
She was very unwell,
yes.
But it was almost like that was his kind of shield, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it was.
You can't, you know, give me a hard time. You can't be critical of me because I'm looking after my ill wife.
That's right.
Which is proof alone, is it not, that I'm not in any way, couldn't possibly be unfaithful
to her. That's right. And do you know what caught him out in the end? His own ego caught him out, because he went on telly to, he must have thought, hang on, the woods are burning, getting a bit close to me here. So he went on telly and said, look, in the 60s, I represent a lot of people, a lot of DJs. He named a couple who had already died.
Well, John, it was all about Operation U-Tree.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Operation U-Tree. He said, nobody was asking for birth certificates off young girls in those days. It was the era of free love, you know.
Right.
Anyway, one woman who saw that interview, who he'd assaulted, went to the police and said he'd assaulted me. The police then heard another complaint. They raided his home.
It wasn't necessarily in the 60s, was it? Or was it not later than that?
No. He was trying to deflect anything from himself by saying that he was aware of this behaviour in the 60s.
So what I'm saying is the woman that came forward, was she not from
it was the 80s,
from
I think.
The 80s?
Yeah, that's definitely.
What I'm saying. She wasn't a teenager in the 60s.
No, but guess what? This woman had, 20 years after she said she'd been assaulted by him, she had written a letter to him saying, I want you to stand up and apologise to me.
Right.
Guess what he did? He
what
kept
did he
that
do?
Letter in his bedside drawer.
Yeah.
And when the cops raided his home I know they go for computers and all that. They found this letter that she'd written to him.
Yeah.
And he had never replied to it or recognised it, or and that gave them the clue as to what was going on.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Let's take a little pause for a minute because you want to listen to this, and we'll be back afterwards.
Right. Now, let me tell you something else as well. A guy who's died who's very, very interesting, but and massively famous in France, but nobody's ever heard of him outside of France. Yeah. Johnny Hallyday.
Johnny Hallyday, oh yes, French Elvis.
Johnny Hallyday.
Well, you know, I mean, I'd
obviously... The French Elvis. Yeah,
I mean, I'd heard of him, but I mean, if you asked me to name one of his songs, I wouldn't be able to.
Neither would I. But he was massively famous in France. Now, his funeral only happened this week.
It was like a state funeral.
It was a state funeral, you're absolutely right.
I think what's his name? President Pompidou's funeral was no bigger.
No, you're absolutely right. I think Mr. Macron is still running France, isn't he? And he's there on the Champs-Élysées, right? Watching this cortege go past. There's 200,000 people lying in the streets for Johnny Hallyday.
Do you know, it's funny because I was talking to somebody in the office the other day about this, and she said to me, you know, he's really the only pop star that France has ever had. Mm. But, of course, I then started reeling off different sorts of names. I said, what about Jane Birkin, you know, with the Je T'aime?
Well, she made one record.
Yeah, I know, but she was still a pop star. What about Plastic Bertrand, the ones that did that kind of punk song, you know, Zankat, you know,
that one? That's right.
And then there's Jean-Michel Jarre.
Oh, no, I loved
him. Oxygen.
Boom, 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 boom.
That one,
Oxygen, I think it was
Charles Aznavour. She may be the face I care for. You know, there's quite a lot of them when you think about it.
Yeah.
So all this nonsense that, you know, the French have never promoted, Sacha Distel.
Sacha Distel,
you know, the French have never had any pop stars. It's actually a load of old bollocks.
Yeah, it is. And they've had film stars as well. Gerard Pompidou. Is it Gerard Pompidou?
He's the guy, Depardieu.
Depardieu, that's right.
He's the guy
with a big nose.
Had to be thrown off an aeroplane, I seem to remember, for urinating in the aisle.
That's right.
Because they wouldn't give him any water to drink.
That's right. And so desperate were France to get rid of him, they happily agreed to him becoming a Russian citizen.
He's gone to Russia.
Yeah, he's gone to Russia and became a Russian citizen.
I can imagine he's probably get his face down in a bottle of vodka every single day.
I would imagine. But poor old Johnny Holiday, I mean, presumably, he never went on holiday anywhere except the south of France, because if he did, nobody'd know who he was.
Well, maybe that's why he wanted to go on holiday elsewhere, because then nobody would... I mean, because if he'd go on holiday south of France, he couldn't go anywhere.
Oh, no, but he liked the attention.
Yeah.
He actually... You know, there was a group called Sailor years ago who came from Cornwall.
Oh, yeah.
And they made a song called Girls, Girls, Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Girls, Girls, Girls.
I remember
girls.
That. That was particularly bad. Was that one of those Mickey Most productions?
Yeah, it was. They used to wear hoop jumpers and berets and look like people from the seaside.
But they were no more French than we were.
No, they were no more French than we were. Yeah. But the song they wrote, Girls, 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 was a quote from Johnny Hallyday about what is your biggest problem in life? Girls, girls.
Maurice Chevalier was the other one.
Maurice Chevalier, that's right. Now, you see,
thank heaven for little girls.
Yeah, now, is he gone? Is he dead?
Oh, he must be, yeah.
Right, well, let me tell you this.
He was ancient when I was a kid.
Now, let me tell you this. I was all very suspicious of that song he wrote.
Why?
Well, you know, the lyrics were, you know...
it was a very much more innocent time, though.
For little girls.
But it was a much more innocent time.
For little girls, get bigger every day. I mean, that to me is a bit, you know...
You couldn't sing it now.
No.
But in that time, it was a much more innocent time. You could say that kind of thing. You know, it wasn't like he was saying he fancied the little girl. He was saying how great it would be when they grow up.
Well, yes, but even so, you know, it was like...
are you suddenly throwing off your Sid the Sexist mantle?
Well, I remember years ago, sadly we come from... you know, the gutter press division of the newspaper
world. Speak for yourself, matey.
All right, I'll speak for
myself. I used to work for the Sunday Times, I think you'll find.
Yeah, I suppose you did a bit for the Sunday Times. But
I was one of their main stringers in America.
Yeah, of course you were. Yes, that's right. I forgot about that. Now, I was in the same building as the Daily Star, right? And the Daily Star, at one stage, to try and save its circulation, really, because of a huge battle between them and the Mirror and the Sun, they decided to merge with the Daily Sport. Do you remember?
I do remember
that. Yeah, that's right.
Which is a horrendous paper. Still, Sunday Sport's still going.
It's
by
still
the way.
Going.
Well, and it's just awful.
It's utter.
I mean, you wouldn't even count it as a
soft,
proper paper.
No, it's soft porn garbage.
But the stories are all rubbish. I mean, they're
just
totally made up.
Everything's rubbish. But anyway, so they decided, you know, to merge with this, and they had an editor who died of a heart attack trying to make it a responsible paper called Mike somebody. I can't remember anything else. But of course, they moved into the building I was in. You see. But anyway, they're great. Trick, or call it something else, which again would have got the editor arrested today, was to start taking pictures of a girl who was 15 years and 10 months old. Right. This is the sport in those days. Right. And it was a countdown to when she became 16.
Right.
It was, I mean,
horrendous. It's awful, isn't it?
It's dreadful. Yeah. Absolutely shocking. And unfortunately, that's the sort of newspaper world we came from in those days. Except we weren't at that end of
it. Well, we were never at that end of it. No.
No.
I mean, certainly, I mean, as far as when I worked for, quite a lot for the News of the World when I was in America as well. When it was a very, it was a mass circulation paper. It was the biggest selling paper in the world.
Of course
it
was.
Not just in the English speaking world. I mean, there wasn't one that was bigger.
Yeah.
And, you know, funnily enough, I went and interviewed a girl with the, of course, famous Andrew Morton, who later became the, you know, the Princess Diana diarist. And he tracked down some woman who used to be a girlfriend of Prince Andrew's. I think it was when Andrew was marrying Fergie.
Oh, okay.
So we went off to Canada to find this woman and did this interview with her. And it was quite graphic stuff about what he was like in bed and all that kind of thing. But we did sort of 1 to 11 on it on the Sunday. It was a fantastic...
Which paper was that for?
News of the World.
For the News of the World,
because Andrew Morton was the world correspondent.
Yeah, of course he was, yeah.
You know,
of course
before he became a multi-millionaire author of books about Princess Diana.
Do you know, Andrew Morton, I worked with him when he was the royal correspondent. I wasn't the royal correspondent, but you know, in those days, there were so many royal stories that actually, if the royal correspondent was away on tour with somebody, you had to go and cover something else one of the other royal family were doing.
Well, I mean, there was so much to be written in those days that, you know, when he came over, I mean, I did all the groundwork basically. I flew up to Canada, I found her, and as soon as everything was in place and we got the photographers and everything else, he then flew over to sort of do the big piece. But I got a joint byline with him, which was quite nice.
Brilliant, excellent. So we're at one one royal event, and it was with Diana. So it was in America. He'd come over, you know, to do something. I don't know what she was doing. Maybe in the Caribbean or something like that.
Yeah, could have been.
And I remember talking to him, and he said to me, because obviously he looks like Superman, doesn't he? You know,
he still does. Funny enough, we saw him in the studios not that long ago.
We did.
And he looks exactly the same.
He does.
He hasn't aged in 30 years.
And his lovely sort of Yorkshire accent is still there, and he's very quiet. Yeah.
He looks like Clark Kent.
He does look like Clark Kent, Superman. So... I said,
well, Superman's a bit different, because Superman is when Clark Kent changes into Superman.
Ah, you're absolutely right.
Takes his glasses off.
You're absolutely
right.
And
then he's wearing a sort of blue leotard thing.
You're absolutely right. He looks like Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting me.
Not at all.
And I said to Andrew, I said, how are you enjoying the Royal Beat? He said, it's fantastic. He said, you know, I have a thing with Diana. And I said, yeah, well, I think an awful lot of men think they have a thing with Diana. I said, it's like being a young pop star fan. You think that the guy up on the stage is singing just for you, don't you? He said, no. He said, Mike, I'm telling you, I make eye contact with Diana and there is something there.
Right.
And he told me this a good 2 years before he wrote the book. And he wrote the book because, in fact, Diana did take him into his confidence and started sending him tapes of my thoughts on my life.
Well, funnily enough, I mean, my adjoinder to that one, right, which I have to say makes me look rather foolish, was that I was into, when the book first came out, I was still in New York.
Right.
I was asked to go on Fox, Channel 5, as it was then, to talk about it, right? And I'd covered a few royal stories, and I knew Andrew Morton, and I was of the opinion at that time that it was a load of old cobblers, right?
Yeah.
And so I said that. I said, look, I said, do you really expect me to believe, or do you really expect to believe, that the Princess of Wales, you know, the woman who is about to become the next Queen of England, is really going to give her innermost thoughts to a newspaper tabloid journalist? I said, do you really think that's going to happen?
Yeah.
There's absolutely no way that he is going to be confirmed as having said any of this stuff is true.
Yeah.
They won't deny it either. So he's been very clever. I said, I know Andrew Morton very well.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic journalist. I said, but the idea that he's got this straight from Diana is a load of old rubbish.
Yeah. Well, I
wish I still had the tape of that.
Exactly,
you know, because
fantastic.
Of course, about 3 weeks later, it all turned out to be true.
Yeah, it all started in Private Eye. So many things do. Private Eye being the satirical newspaper which you and I used to read in Fleet Street, but don't have to now because there's so much on social.
Well, you used to appear in it quite a lot, didn't you?
I did actually on one or two occasions, unfortunately. Yeah, getting arrested.
I don't think I've ever appeared in it, which I'm quite glad about.
Yeah, I got lifted, as you know, in Sardinia during the World Cup.
Yes.
Just trying to do my job. They said I was pestering a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Your job actually wasn't pestering a woman. You weren't actually working at the time.
I was asking her whether she had been having a fling with members of the England coaching squad and all that
trying
kind
to
of
undermine
stuff.
England again.
No, not at all.
And also, you weren't there working, were you? You'd just gone out there on a jolly.
Well, no, I'd gone out to watch a couple of games,
but
I was the news editor, I kept an eye on everything that was going on.
Yes, I'm saying, you were not there in your official capacity as a reporter.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm never off the job, mate, as you know.
So
but, anyway, so the first Private Eye story I read, Diana has told somebody that, oh, Charles, i.e. her husband, no, he's potty.
Mm.
And what do you mean he's potty? Well, he talks to his plants in the garden. And everybody thought this was a joke.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's exactly what he does.
Exactly.
It's exactly what he does.
And of course, nowadays, nobody thinks there's anything odd about that.
Well, listen, I tell you what, talking to plants and all that kind of stuff, did you see the stuff recently? I'm going to show you a picture now, right? Uh-huh. And you're now going to apologise to me, because I'm showing you a picture of the very, very famous actor called Glenda Jackson.
Okay.
Is that Glenda Jackson? No, it's not. It's Dame Judi Dench. They're very similar.
They're not very similar.
Well, that's Dame
Judi. They're two women who happen to be in the later stages of life who are very, very good actresses.
Very good actresses indeed. Yeah. Would you agree that's Dame Judi Dench?
I would agree.
Because Glenda Jackson became an MP. She's not gone back to being an actress.
She became an MP from Hampstead, funnily enough.
That's right.
Of course, my old constituency.
That's right, yeah. So what is...
Are you sure we've got time for this? I don't think we've got time for this. You may have to roll it into the next one.
I might roll into the next one, but just to let you know, she is conversing with a tree, and I've told you all about that.
She's got what looks like a listening device plugged into the tree.
We'll go into that later on in another broadcast, right? Yeah. Now...
Because we're out of time for this one.
Can I tell you one more thing?
Well, all right.
Very briefly, okay?
Very briefly.
I said to you some time ago when we did a live show, I came on the stage with an empty tin of peas, a metal tin, with my car keys in it, did I not?
You did.
And I said, the evil hackers will not be stealing my car tonight because they won't be able to steal the code off my fob for my Jaguar.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that, yeah.
Right. Guess what that says?
Somebody stole the tin, as I recall.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Somebody stole the tin after the show.
They were so happy that they could get something that you owned.
They took an empty can
of peas home.
And then came back later and asked me to sign it. Yeah. But look at this. This says, shield your cash from the secret skimmers.
Yeah.
They are now selling wallets made of metal so that people cannot steal the details of your credit card.
I could give you better than that. I was in the garden centre the other week,
right,
buying some stuff for the Christmas tree, right?
Yeah.
And sure enough, there they were, sort of credit card size little metal thing.
That's right.
To say, keep your credit card safe from hackers.
People can stand behind you, and if they've got a device underneath their coat, they can steal the details of your credit card, and before you know it, they whip off to the bank and they've emptied your bank account.
Yeah. Well, good news for me is that they'll probably still spend less than all the people that I'd have to support in life, so I wouldn't object to it.
Right.
Now, because this is going out the week that it's going out, we should remind people that on Sunday, December the 17th, we are live at the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
We are.
Nobody else has seen us this year unless you came all the way to New York.
That's right.
It's the only show we've done in the United Kingdom. There are a few tickets left way up on the third level.
Yeah.
If you want to come,
it's a very good seat, the third level.
Well, it is very good, but you'll be quite high up and you'll be able to look down on us, which a lot of people do anyway, without any regards for our personalities.
It's a bit harsh.
But it's going to be a great show.
Yeah.
You can still get tickets on the twomics.co.uk or through the Shepherd's Bush Empire or through Ticketmaster UK.
Yeah.
This is on the record.
Yeah. I got lifted, as you know, in Sardinia during the World Cup.
Yes.
Just trying to do my job. They said I was pestering a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
your job actually wasn't pestering a woman. You weren't actually working.
I was asking her whether she had been having a fling with members of the England coaching squad and all that
kind of
stuff.
Trying to undermine England again.
No, not at all.
And also, you weren't there working, were you? You'd just gone out there on a jolly.
Well, no, I'd gone out to watch a couple of games, but I was the news editor, I kept an eye on everything that was going on.
Yes, I'm saying, you were not there in your official capacity as a reporter.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm never off the job, mate, as you know.
So are you.
So he comes and he sits there. I said, new roller, Max? He said, yeah. He said, do you want a lift in it?
Mm.
And I declined.
Right.
But it didn't stop me taking a picture of it, put it on Twitter and saying, you know, me and my mate Max with his new roller at a charity function today.
Yeah.
And guess what? The following morning, 6 o'clock news, Max Clifford had just been arrested in his house in St George's Hill, Weybridge. That's what it was called.
I've warned you about the Porky Dicks before.
Yeah, and that was the start.
You know, he should have known.
That was the start of the prosecution, which led to him going to jail for 8 years.
Right.
Amazing.
You were never alone.
No.
For a second.
No, absolutely.
You couldn't go, I'm terribly sorry, I'm just putting my child to bed.
Yes.
I don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out there and get the story.
Absolutely.
Good. But you'll be quite high up and you'll be able to look down on us, which a lot of people do anyway, without any regards for our personalities.